Welcome to the first episode in our CME podcast series on demystifying fiber in pediatric patients. The series is sponsored by the NASPGHAN Foundation for Children's Digestive Health and Nutrition, along with the North American Society for Pediatric Gastroenterology, Hepatology, and Nutrition, and in collaboration with the American Academy of Pediatrics. A very special thank you to Procter & Gamble for providing support for this educational activity. I'm Dr. Ian Scheinman, Chair of the NASPGHAN Nutrition Committee and NASPGHAN Foundation Nutrition Campaign, and Associate Professor of Pediatrics, Division of Pediatric Gastroenterology and Nutrition at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland. This podcast focuses on dietary fiber and what we need to know. Our faculty today is Dr. Mark Corkins, who is the Division Chief of Pediatric Gastroenterology at Le Bonheur Children's Hospital and Professor of Pediatrics at the University of Tennessee Health Sciences Center in Memphis, Tennessee, along with Dr. Asim McGool, who is an Assistant Professor of Clinical Pediatric and Gastroenterology, Hepatology, and Nutrition at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and the University of Pennsylvania Perelman School of Medicine.
Hi, this is Mark Corkins, and this is the NASPGHAN Foundation with NASPGHAN podcast. Today, we're going to talk about dietary fiber, what we need to know. Well, Asim, what is fiber?
Thanks, Mark. So fiber really is non-digestible carbohydrates that we ingest, and they escape digestion by ourselves, and they reach the colon pretty much intact.
And, you know, really, this has changed a whole lot in the last few years. You know, when I was training and young, we thought of fiber as soluble and insoluble. And that is kind of it, you know. And now there's a whole bunch of different types that we think about, and it's the roles they play. And the Dietary Reference Index really classifies fiber as being dietary. Usually, you know, those are from plant sources. They're non-digestible. There's functional fibers, and those are ones that have some benefits in humans. And then there's the total, you know, all the dietary fiber all together, you know, the dietary and the functional as a you know, common addition of those sources. So common sources of fiber?
So that's interesting because, again, as you had just, you know, talked about, a lot of what we get in terms of fiber in the diet comes from plant sources. So whole grains, fresh fruits and vegetables are good dietary sources that we don't think about as much. We often think about supplements, and supplements that are commonly available on the market are psyllium, which is present in some laxative preparations, wheat dextran, and more recently, pectin, which is available at supermarkets.
Of course, you know, we're doing this podcast, so obviously we must think this is important. Well, why is it important?
Well, it's pretty important with several aspects of human digestion and physiology, Mark. And from the GI system, I think we often think about it as something we use to help treat constipation because fiber seems to add bulk and consistency to stool, and it helps keep the colon retain some fluid. It provides some roughage for things to pass through, and it's used both in the prevention and treatment for constipation. So it really plays an important role in things moving through the colon. It also reduces pressure in the colon. It reduces risk for certain diseases that relate to increased pressure, like diverticulosis. And then in addition, some interesting things happen in the colon. The colon is much more of a dynamic environment than we had initially thought. The bacteria in our colon is a very active compartment, and they will ferment a lot of these bacteria to active products based on what else is in the diet. And they make short-chain fatty acids, including acetate, butyric acid, and propionic acid.
Now, again, this is some of that newer information I was talking about before, you know, this fermentation, that there's an active role here. And again, the bacteria are part of that. And the byproduct of that fermentation, the gases that are produced, the carbon dioxide and methane, and that interplay between the microbiota and the fiber substrates and those prebiotics. The fiber is actually now considered a prebiotic that supports that microbiota. And then it turns out the short-chain fatty acids are the preferred fuel for the colon. It stimulates blood flow, electrolyte and fluid uptake. And if there's a deficit, specifically butyric acid, that's associated with ulcerative colitis and with a risk reduction for development of colon cancer and adenocarcinoma. The non-digestible fiber may play a role in colonic adenocarcinoma risk reduction. It decreases transit time, dilutes toxins, carcinogens, and tumor promoters. So all these factors may decrease the toxin exposure and have those benefits. What about non-GI benefits? Any of those?
Well, there's a lot, actually, information from non-digestible source, from non-GI sources. Fiber really helps regulate appetite. It decreases the rapidity with which you absorb nutrients, so it helps regulate blood sugar. It helps with insulin sensitivity. It helps you feel fuller, which in some ways helps prevent us from overeating. It helps lower what we call the glycemic index of foods, and it really helps regulate blood sugar. So it may have a role in obesity prevention and diabetes prevention. Slow absorption is also is therefore thought to be, you know, of benefit in human digestion. The other interesting thing is that fiber often binds cholesterol and may prevent absorption of dietary cholesterol and reabsorption of it in the enterohepatic cycle. And therefore, it has a role in controlling fiber. And really, that's where a lot of the medical literature has picked up on this, as it may be important in prevention for cardiovascular disease, particularly by these mechanisms.
Of course, the problem with this is we have very spotty literature. You know, some of it's real good in some areas, and some of it's real thin. And one of the areas is how much. You know, the data is not really there to come up with a recommended daily intake for fiber. Now, there's an adequate intake recommendation, and that's life stage group, you know, age and sex, and, you know, Americans need to have, basically, what the NHANES surveys seem to indicate is we don't have enough. Compared to the reference amounts, we're not even close. The American Health Foundation recommends for children this general rule of thumb is age plus 5 grams of fiber a day to a max of about 25. Basically, life is over at age 20, if you want to think of it in that aspect. So what kind of fiber do you recommend for your patients?
Well, again, I agree with you there. A lot of this data initially came from the cardiovascular disease literature, and we do extrapolate it to kids. There are a lot of different kinds of fiber in our diet, and really diversity is the key with what we do. We like to promote healthier lifestyles. We like to go with more multigrains and whole grains. And a lot of variety in terms of what we do. And there's even in some parts of the country seasonal variety that we can use with summer fruits and vegetables that we can sort of use. I always try to prefer that we do dietary substitutions rather than turn to supplements first. So fruits, vegetables, multigrains, and whole grains, as I mentioned. But the other sources that we can get in supplement form, so there's psyllium, there's wheat dextran, there are pectin products that are available over the counter, and they can readily be added to a variety of fluids that really mask some of their characteristics and really complement some of their characteristics and are available from, you know, toddlers onwards all the way up to adulthood.
Of course, one of the things we always worry about in medicine is do no harm. Is there any risk with fiber? Well, there's no known toxicity for the general population. Now, for instance, celiac disease, well, a lot of these are wheat or grain sources. So gluten sensitivity, inflammatory bowel disease, perhaps when they're inflamed, irritable bowel syndrome, those who are restricted to specific diets because of metabolic diseases or the ketogenic diet, they may have to have a little bit more careful fiber intake and have some dietary input as to what fiber sources they can use appropriately. Of course, that's kind of literally the topic for our next podcast.
Right, and in those specific conditions, we have to be very creative in terms of what we do, and it's quite fascinating to see for diseases or conditions like constipation, celiac disease, gluten sensitivity, and IBD, you have issues with dietary fiber in terms of risk factors for developing the disease. There's some theoretical mechanistic aspects where fiber may be playing a role in prevention of disease, as well as in management of disease, and I think that's something very important and very nuanced that we're going to look at in some specific disease states in the next podcast. So in summary, we've sort of talked about what dietary fiber is. We've talked about the types of dietary fiber, the common sources, how it's important in the GI system as well as in the greater picture in the non-GI system into human health, how much fiber we need to eat, and what sources of fiber we can look at. And in our next podcast, we're going to be talking about specific disease states and conditions that require a little bit more scrutiny and help sort of flesh out how to manage fiber.
Thanks for listening to this episode in the CME podcast series on demystifying fiber in pediatric patients. Please go to the NASPGHANfoundation.org to the nutrition and obesity section to receive future episodes. I'm Ann Scheiman.